This is episode 307 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, November 22nd, 2010.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. This week, it's Facebook's turn to make waves in the pond that is the internet. Facebook has completely rewritten their messaging product and has launched it this week. Internally known as Project Titan, or unofficially and perhaps overenthusiastically, the Gmail killer. The all-in-one messaging service allows for the first time its 500 million members to communicate with people outside the social network, intensifying the battle with Google and Yahoo for users' internet time. Addressing speculation the world's largest social networking site was planning a Gmail killer, Facebook Chief Executive Officer Mark Zuckerberg said the new system will let users own an @facebook.com address, but stressed it went beyond mere email. All in all, the new mail feature to be rolled out over the coming months lets users send and receive instant and text messages, in addition to standard email and Facebook notes. Though CEO Mark Zuckerberg didn't go as far as declaring email dead, he sees the 40-year-old technology as secondary to more seamless, faster ways of communicating, such as text messages and chats. The Facebook founder said this is more a messaging system that includes email as part of it. Zuckerberg said more than 350 million of Facebook's 500 million users now actively send and receive messages on his website, and did not expect people to stop using traditional email tomorrow. But he had hoped more and more will shift to an integrated, cross-platform mode of communications over the long term, such as the service he debuted last Monday. Facebook and Google's intensifying rivalry is expected to play a crucial role in shaping the future of the internet, and the industry is closely watching their pitched struggle for web surfers' time online, advertising dollars, and increasingly costly Silicon Valley talent. After all, last jump ship from Google to Facebook. According to a 2009 survey from Pew Internet and American Life Project, text messaging has surpassed face-to-face contact, email, phone calls, and instant messaging as the primary form of communication for US teens. I wonder if that applies to Australian teens as well.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner takes a look at Facebook's Project Titan and draws parallel to Google's now-defunct Wave. Lena van der Venter talks video games for the 18+, political pressures applied to Labor in federal parliament to produce the NBN business plan, Microsoft says don't swap the cards in Phone 7, and Microsoft's IE9 and Silverlight guru Michael Cordai keeps us up to speed with the company's new web browser, and Woz says that Android is a platform for everyone. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Prime Minister refuses to release the business plan for Australia's NBN. Telstra shares dive as the lower house passes legislation to structurally separate the telco. Apple releases iOS 4.2 to developers. An international arrest warrant is issued for the founder of the WikiLeaks website after rape allegations. And scientists create, track and study antimatter. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The government just managed to defeat a motion in Parliament last week that it released the business plan for its $43 billion national broadband network. Prime Minister Gillard is refusing to release the business plan until December, which is after Parliament has finished sitting for the year. She says that the business case is absolutely irrelevant to the opposition's decision-making because they've already made up their minds to destroy the NBN.
It is more than 400 pages long, and the government, as prudent and responsible managers, are now analysing the case in detail running the fine-tooth comb through it, and that is absolutely appropriate when we are dealing with an infrastructure project of this size and this significance to the nation.
But the Leader of the Opposition, Mr Tony Abbott, said the government was intentionally withholding the business plan to avoid scrutiny.
Why does the Prime Minister expect the Parliament to approve the national broadband network without access to the business case which the government has but is refusing to release?
The opposition communication spokesman, Mr Malcolm Turnbull, on ABC Radio last week.
This government is determined to avoid any scrutiny of its $43 billion national broadband network. She is not going to release any part of the business case, and I think we can be sure that we won't see very much of it until after the Parliament has risen.
A vote for the release of the business plan was defeated 74 to 71, much to the upset of Mr Abbott and independent members including Nick Xenophon. Mr Xenophon said on ABC Radio that he had been asked by the Prime Minister to sign a confidentiality agreement in exchange for access to the NBN business plan, but that he thought this placed him in an untenable position.
When it comes to this piece of infrastructure that will affect the shape of Australia's telecommunications industry, that it will affect every Australian consumer for many years to come, then signing up to a confidentiality agreement before I vote on it, it doesn't seem the right thing to do.
The ABC's PM program said the government wants more time before releasing the business case, arguing it raises policy and commercial issues, so it plans to unveil its policy response together with the business plan. Also in federal parliament last week, new legislation has been passed which would see the structural separation of Telstra. The changes will require Telstra to conduct network operations and wholesale functions independently, and the legislation was backed by the opposition, but with some amendments. Mr Turnbull said that as a monopoly, prices for access to the NBN would inevitably creep up, so he ensured the deal would be subject to the Competition and Consumer Act under existing competition laws. Telstra shareholders reacted angrily to the news last week as the telco's share value dropped to a new record low of $2.55. Speaking at the AGM in Melbourne on Friday, Telstra chairman and director, Ms. Catherine Livingston, said the board needed to do more to protect shareholder value.
Telstra is in a strong position. We have the strategy and networks. We have the people and capabilities to lead the industry as it transitions to a data-led, internet-dominated, multi-device and connected world, and in Australia, an NBN world, where product and service differentiation will be essential.
Ms. Livingston said the board was very concerned by Telstra's undervalued share price. Telstra's Chief Financial Officer and Executive Director, Mr. John Stanhope, said last week that Telstra was continuing to work towards finalising an NBN deal with the government by Christmas. The Structural Separation Bill was passed by the lower house on Tuesday and will now go to the Senate for consideration. Telstra's share price closed at $2.62 last week. Now to other tech news, a rumour that Apple would release iOS 4.2 last week was partially correct, although only developers at this stage will have access to the latest iGadget operating system. Developers with access to beta and pre-release editions of Apple's iOS received the update on Friday. iOS 4.2.1, the third so-called gold master to be released by Apple, reportedly fixes a voice-over IP bug that interferes with call quality. Analysts have noted that developer updates are becoming more frequent and believe that Wednesday, the 24th of November, is probably the earliest that end users are likely to see the new operating system. A warrant has been issued for the arrest of WikiLeaks founder and chief editor, Mr. Julian Assange. The warrant was issued last week by the Stockholm District Court after allegations of rape and sexual assault were made against him by two women in Sweden. Mr. Assange has claimed the charges are part of a smear campaign against him and his website, which has published close to 500,000 classified US documents and files on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And in the science journal Nature last week, it was announced that researchers at CERN, the European Organisation for Nuclear Research, have successfully produced and trapped 38 atoms of antihydrogen. The atoms were held for about 1/10 of a second, and scientists say that this is a major breakthrough and will help to better understand the mysterious antimatter. The research facility at CERN uses strong and complex magnetic fields to trap antimatter and prevent it from coming into contact with matter. CERN has the only laboratory in the world with a dedicated low-energy anti-proton facility where this type of research can be carried out. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
What is Facebook up to at the moment?
It's not that the technology isn't there and it isn't working. It's bubbling through the system in its own unpredictable way.
And probably from the get-go, otherwise people will look at it and say, it doesn't do what I want, and never come back.
Did you see what Lena just wrote in the chat there?
Damn it, busted.
Stitch up.
Oh, what's happened?
You got so excited with yours, Lena, you threw it at the ground.
Why should Apple expect anyone to buy the 11-inch MacBook Air? Because Steve Jobs is wrong.
Fantastic.
This
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
The great thing, I'm down to four cables again, not 14,000.
Yeah, I walked out going, what a jerk.
Bit of a dweeb.
Yeah.
That's a question for JD, who's just instantly jumped on your laptop.
That's more megas than even I want to eat.
A lot of indigestion. You spend a lot of time on the throne after that.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Now's not the time to play with that, Lena.
I know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. And yes, in front of me is three of the very best. I don't know, someone's missing in action at the moment, but we'll get to that in a minute. Lena, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming back for yet another week.
Thank you for having me.
That's good. And what are you going to... You're going to talk more about gaming things tonight?
Yes, about adult gaming.
I'm learning lots.
You are?
I've got questions for you too.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. No.
Thanks for running by.
Don't look like that. It's harmless. Mostly harmless, as they say in the classics.
To run them by me before. That was great.
Anyway. Dr. Ron, yes, dear. You're wearing that shirt again, which people can see on Ustream?
I am. How are you this week?
I'm good.
Which show is this one?
What do you mean, which show is this? This is Tech Talk Radio.
Yes.
Which one have you been working on?
Is it the last one or the second last one?
It's almost the penultimate, which is the one before the last one.
Correct. Here's something I prepared earlier.
Anti-penultimate.
Well done. Hold up for the camera.
He's holding up, just for the listeners at home, he's actually holding up a piece of white A4 paper with anti-penultimate. Why are you doing this?
It's just to prompt you throughout the night. I thought it'd be
anti-penultimate.
Yes.
Well, the penultimate is the final one before the final one, isn't it?
This is
the one prior to the final one. You get to the top before you come down.
I don't know if I just followed that, but yeah, I think you were right.
Anyone else listening to at the moment, you listen to a few shows back and it's an ongoing dilemma.
We have an ongoing war of English grammar, don't we?
Oh, we do.
From one side of the panel to the other. But it's great to be back this week. There's so much happened this week in the news.
Unbelievable. Before we get onto the news, JD, good evening. How are you?
Good day. Oh, very sad.
Why?
I'm very sad. Steve Wozniak, the traitor.
Oh, don't you get your knickers in a knot because he says Android's good.
He does.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that tonight too.
We will.
It's on the front page of the Tech Talk Radio website too, you might have noticed.
Mm.
You may not have, but you might have. It's there. Was big smiling face. Android is for everyone.
Yay.
Anyway, so what happened to Graham this evening? Did anyone know where he is?
Well, it's funny you should ask. I think Graham's with us in spirit, but not in the studio.
Really?
Mm.
Which part of the spirit?
Well, maybe we can ask him himself. Graham, we can hear you loud and clear.
Graham, how are you going?
Why aren't you in the studio this evening? What's going on? What are you doing?
Because I'm coming to you live from Sophia's Family Restaurant out at Burwood East.
Dr. Ron, did you tell him the wrong date?
I think I did it as a joke. I said, yeah, let's do it on the 22nd. Graham doesn't know our real date's the 6th.
Really?
He's gone. He started eating pizza and pasta without us. He's 2 weeks early.
And I told him it was fancy dress as well.
It's a bit like, hey, what's he wearing?
Something funny.
Yes, I've... No, I'm sitting here in a giant chicken costume at the back of Sophia's Family Restaurant.
Oh, very good.
So no one else showed up. You're all in the studio.
Well done, Dr. Ron. It worked.
Just get around the tables and sell off a few chicken palmers and earn your keep while you're there.
Yep.
It's all right. Well, you've made it up there.
Yeah.
That's very good.
I want to eat the chicken palmers.
Are you going to come back down? Are you going to come back to the studio?
I'll come back to the studio a bit later on. I might just sit here and...
You're just having dinner.
...from here for a little while, if that's all right.
Why don't you kick back and enjoy
their... I want to have my pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy their pizza and pasta, and you can run the panel from remote control from over in Burwood East.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This is good radio, isn't it?
Well, you were down here. You were down here a little earlier, weren't you, Dr. Ron? Are we going to talk about that part yet?
I think you should, yes. I was down there a little bit earlier, and I spoke to Sam, and I also spoke to Terry, I think, and was asking them about their preparedness for our outside broadcast, and they've got everything lined up. They're ready to go.
I'm talking to Terry from Sophia Family Restaurant in Burwood. Terry, what have we got to look forward to on the 6th of December?
Yeah, guys, how are we? We are looking forward to it as well, having you all down here for the night. We hopefully be a great night with the boys. boys are going to do an amazing show, and hopefully we'll be able to provide you with the best service around and best value for money. We've organised a 1750 set menu for the night. It includes garlic bread, hair bread, mixed pizza, mixed pasta and desserts.
Terry, we've got plenty of parking and access to public transport.
Yeah, look, we've got plenty of parking around. We've got over 300 parking spots. We've got public transport all over Burwood, so it's very accessible anywhere you come.
That's fantastic. Okay, 6th of December, $17.50 per person, and we're looking forward to enjoying Sophia's world-famous hospitality on the night.
Yeah, look, guys, we look forward to having you down here. Come down, enjoy the great value for money and our amazing food and service. Thank you very much.
Gee, Dr. Ron, what did you tell him?
So that's what it's going to be like.
Isn't that great? That's terrific. Good on you, Graham.
300 spots is... What?
It might be enough. We're hoping it'll be enough. Well, it might be people spilling out into Burwood Highway.
There's busloads of people coming from Sydney, apparently. Well, who knows?
Yes, there's a vicious rumour, actually. You should come
answer
and...
Answer the phone down here.
Come and join us in the chat if you're not already. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. There's a vicious rumour that Warlock can confirm or deny. He's going to actually hire a minibus, and he's going to be ferrying people down doing a big road trip.
Really?
Yeah.
We should talk about some of our giveaways. I don't really want to spend all night chatting and telling about what we're going to do, because you've got to come along and do it. But we've got some pretty interesting people giving us some pretty good stuff. I didn't really want to talk too much about it. There's your SMS, Graham. I didn't really want much about it on air until I actually arrived. But, Lena, you've got some good toys, haven't you? Who's given you what? If you come along on the night, this is what you can stand to win. Door prizes and the likes?
I've got a big swag from 2K Games.
What's in the swag?
Publisher. We've got copies of Mafia 2, Civ 5, a whole bunch of kids' games as well, DS games and games for the little ones.
Yep.
And some Wii games and some Xbox games.
So come along and you might get a couple of those little things. Yeah. Vicious rumour. I had a chat during the course of the week, and this has probably put a moz on it, to Michael Cordai, who we're going to hear from before the first break.
Now, he's a product evangelist and he works for Microsoft.
He is. He is an evangelist, a guru, whatever you'd like to call it, evangelist. I'm not really too familiar with the word evangelist. I think it's a bit of one of those bastardised sort of words.
It's an Apple term, really, isn't it?
Is it? Yeah, well, it sort of is. But Michael has sort of said he's going to chuck in a copy of Office 2010 for us to give away.
No way!
So.
A copy of Office 2010? Yeah. The prizes just keep getting bigger and better.
I know. And Netcom in Sydney have given us a mobile router, which we're going to be giving away too.
How are people going to be eligible for these things?
Rock up. I don't know. We haven't worked out yet. Oh, there's a door prize.
They're the luckiest audience in the world.
I reckon.
Yeah, they don't have to do anything to get them.
Absolutely.
Just throw them at them.
And there's all sorts of other little, you know, tasty little morsels which will be thrown around too on the night, which will be a bit of fun. So come on down. It's going to be fun. Huge. Should we do a radio show now and stop talking about what we're doing in 2 weeks' time?
Let's do it.
Sorry about that. I think Graham's on his way back too. He disappeared there on Fader 1.
Oh, right, disappeared.
He faded himself out.
Very good. That's very
good. Like
very
that,
tactful of him.
Yeah.
It's polite.
Anyway, all right. Tech Talk Radio, Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in. JD is in. Lena is in on the end. She's meat. What do you got in your T-shirt? Meat is murder. Tasty, tasty murder. Yeah, yep. Good. You.
Ask her where she wore that during the week.
Oh, yeah.
Where did you wear that during the week?
May have worn it to a vegetarian restaurant by accident. I didn't mean...
Oh, is that what all those tweets were about? I was wondering what was going on there.
By accident.
By accident.
Yeah. Love it.
Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where you can come and say good day. Let me have a look in there. Oh, there's lots of people there at the moment. Oh, even Graham's there from up at the restaurant. He's sitting in the chat already.
Oh, nice.
That's good. And, there's all sorts of people. So come and say good day to us. And, other ways of communicating with us. You can send us email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, or you can ring our feedback number, which we really haven't been flogging that much of late, and that's 0386828836, and leave a recorded message, and we might play it to air, providing you don't use words that we can't put to air. Anyway, Dr. Ron Corro, this evening, do you have any?
Of course we have correspondence. We've got a little bit, tiny little bit, Andrew.
Tiny little bit, says he, holding two fingers up.
Two fingers up. Firstly, GJMCN, who will
regular
call for the purposes of the exercise GJ. He is a Tech Talk regular, and he says via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form, read last week's show. Truly, ruly, absolutely honest to God HD. He thinks that's a new form of HD we should have.
What you get on your Blu-ray.
Yes, that's correct. Did you see this?
No, I haven't read this.
Why are we paying so much for so little? GJ says, I've been listening for a while now on this HD debate. I think we should recognise that the company hardware, software and content marketeers are just trying to sell more for increasingly less. The hardware guys started by selling HD. Now it's called True HD. With 3D pushed and 2K or 4K coming, when will they have to start using terms like truly, ruly HD or TRHD?
Ultra HD.
Ultra HD. Screen pixel size and refresh rates mean that unless you get a set bigger than your fridge sideways or your car windscreen, you can't see the difference.
GJ says, I just upgraded to a bigger set, and DVDs in the absence of Blu-ray are the only real way that we can get the content that befits the set. In addition, with stock and headline tickers, broadcasting watermarks, actual production channel watermarks, coming up next boxes, in-shot unpaid-for product blurring, and in-shot paid-for product placement, the television image is progressively being crowded out in favour of GUP. Cheers, GJ.
And so say all of us.
The watermark thing is a pet hate of mine.
But there's a reason for it.
There is a reason for it. I know there's a reason for it, but I hate it because from the consumer point of view, from the TV watcher's point of view, I think it's meaningless. You have Channel
yes,
7
have
got theirs, and then they've copied something that's being replayed by Channel 9. They've got theirs in another corner, and then Channel 10 pick it up in another corner. Then someone blurs something out in another corner, and you can see a CSNBC watermark blurred out in another corner, and you think,
get used to it, Dr. Ron.
What is the point? There is no point.
The point is that it shows where the material has come from, and that's what it's all about these days.
I don't know what channel I'm watching when I see three watermarks.
But doesn't matter. Do you really need to know that you're watching the Channel 9 news as opposed to Channel 7? Because that's where you'd see it. You won't see it on normal programming.
But what? Well, that, exactly. That's right. But it's where like news agencies have.
And the reason why we have watermarks is because the technical quality of, let's just say, people's recording abilities now surpass that of what we used to have many moons ago, so that you could always tell the difference between off-air and VHS. Now you can't
now
tell
you
the
can't.
Difference between off-air and
or first
and
generation
optical recordings
and 25th generation, because it's the same thing, isn't it? The bits, are, the ones and nones are all the same.
To a degree. Mm. To a degree. You've got to remember that compression is not your friend. If you uncompress and recompress, every time you do that, you go through a lossy stage, unless you're using one of those really good codecs like Abbott's HD DNX, which is what they call a non-destructive codec. And that means that you can actually encode and recode and encode and recode without going like the old generation loss on VHS.
Yep.
So you've got to be careful with that. But anyway, that's for another. That's getting a bit too technical.
It is getting technical. Punters. Kempi, via the Tech Talk radio feedback form, says, hi again. Because Kempi sent us some feedback a couple of weeks ago. Thanks for following up on nonite.com.
Oh, that's a good site, that, isn't
it? Yeah, which lets
I went to it during the course of the week.
Yeah, have you used it?
No, but I went there.
Ah.
It's a downloading site, isn't it? A portal where you can download things without funny, strange things in it.
It is.
Tell us about it, Dr. Ron.
I will. I'll, just before I go on, Graham would like, if it's not too much problem, would you please push up his fader?
Oh, is he back again?
He's
is
back
he?
Again,
well,
yes.
he pulled his own fader down.
Yeah,
I pulled him down.
Graham,
Graham, your fader's up
you're,
before we
you're
go.
Back on. What would you like
hello.
To... Yes, hello. What would you like to say about really, truly, absolutely honest to God, HD?
Well, I just want to make a historical comment here that back in... In the late 50s, probably early 60s, through till even in the 80s, the BBC were broadcasting 405-line television before that, and then they switched over to 625-line, which is what we know now as PAL, and what we all grew up watching, 625-line PAL. Guess what the 625-line service was called when it was first introduced?
Let me guess, high definition?
It was called high definition, that's right.
Oh, so times haven't changed much, really.
High-definition television changes... Well, the definition changes with the technology. So, yes, it was high-definition when it was introduced. Now it's our standard def.
It
and
is.
In the future, what we call high-definition will then be considered low-definition again as fancier formats come in. So that was my comment on the last little piece, anyway.
Oh, very good.
Good
very
one. Good one, GJ. Thank you. So Kempi says, hi again. Thanks for following up on nonite.com. That was indeed the site I was thinking of. After listening to last week's show via podcast, I feel like I'm sitting in the pizza restaurant here, and the noise in the background. The
well, he faded himself out before.
Well, I'll tell you what. If
Graham, can you bring
Andrew,
a couple of Mexicanas, please?
I'll fade myself out. I'll see what I can do. If you leave me turned up, I'll just turn myself down, and I'll come on when I've got something to say.
Oh, that could be scary. This is technology. This is live technology.
It is.
Who's gone?
I don't know if the mixed gelati had survived the trip in the car. It's like 30 degrees today or something.
It is a fairly warm day here in Melbourne, yes.
Go
the people
gelati.
Listening to us in Catherine are going, what are you talking about? It's like that up here every day. Yes.
Hot for Melbourne. Now, after... third go at Kempi. We'll get to you, Kempi. After listening to last week's show via podcast, there was continuing discussion on the topic of home theatre PCs. I thought I'd add a little fuel to the fire by sharing some of the results from my own experiences. The keyboard mouse issue is certainly a very big WAF reducer.
Ah, oh, yeah, the WAF acceptability factor.
Well, we're talking about using either wireless keyboards and mouses or using the remote controls that sometimes come with tuner cards. If you have an iDevice...
Salmon cards.
Tuner, the salmon cards. That was a Sony LG...
LG, I think.
LG Promo, wasn't it, yep. with the tuner. Mm. If you have an eye device, you can eliminate these more or less completely in more ways than you might think. I personally am using a second-gen iTouch with iPhone upgrade software, using an app sourced from the App Store, Mobile Air Mouse. He's got a link here, mobilemouse.com.
Sounds pretty cool, a mobile air mouse.
You can control your mouse pointer with all the functionality of a normal laptop trackpad. Also included is a pop-up QWERTY keyboard that includes function keys and more. I've tried a number of similar applications, says Kempe, before finding this one, and this one certainly stands out for reliability and functionality. I wouldn't try typing out anything substantial, though, mainly due to my stumpy fingers. Thanks, Kempe. Now, Kempe,
thanks, Kempe.
I've got an Android version which I use, and I've demoed to Graham last week, and he was moderately impressed. And
that's, moderately?
Yeah, moderately.
Oh, he's back.
It worked really well, he didn't it, Dr. Rod?
He's doing his own panelling.
It's all on remote control. You can just kick back and relax tonight, Andrew. Yeah, it's called Gmote.
That's the idea.
Yeah, the Android version you can download.
And it worked really well. I was able to remote control your mouse from the screen, and it was all pretty seamless. It was really worked well.
It was good. And as I think you said last week as well, Graham, like it can work in conjunction with a wireless mouse and a wireless keyboard. So you can have those hooked up and ready to go if you want, and you can just use one of these applications like Gmote or Kempe's mobile mouse if that's what suits.
And if anyone wants
and
to know about Air Mouse,
a traditional remote control as well.
If you want to use Air Mouse on your Apple TV, see me on the forum because I've worked out how to make that work too.
Oh, well done, JD.
Very good. All right, so that's our correspondence.
That's our correspondence. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the email address.
I'm very disconcerting with... I think your pizza's ready. He's gone. That wasn't me.
His margarita's ready. Yeah.
Sorry, Andrew. I'll stay if you like.
Oh, no. It's very disconcerting. As Dr. Ron said, it's like being in the pizza parlour, and it's, like, very distracting. But anyway, that's all right. We'll get used to it.
We have to get used to it.
We're tech in training this evening.
Yes.
Yes. Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham up at the local pizza shop, and JD. Ah, dear. Of course, Lena is in this evening. We're going to be talking video games and all sorts of stuff later on. Now, let's talk about my travels, your mobile travels, because I think mobile technology needs a bit of a work through during the course of. I travelled into central Victoria, very disappointed in coverage by traditional networks, and the incumbent did incredibly well. So, because I have two services, and it is if you're really doing a lot of stuff travelling, especially into remote places, it's clear to me now, and especially in the last little bit, you know, main thoroughfare between two sort of fairly sizable. Melbourne and Bendigo, which is two very big sort of places, coverage is very ordinary for the non-incumbent carrier, both the ones I tried, which was Three and Vodafone in particular. As you said a few weeks ago, Dr. Ron, you were very disappointed. You went over a hill and that was it, no coverage for some time.
Yeah, I did say that. Well, I was down Mount Martha Way on the Mornington Peninsula, which is down the bottom of the Port Phillip Bay in Melbourne. And, yeah, it was hours and hours and hours there where I had no coverage on my handset, which is a 3C code. Very disappointing, especially since...
You're supposed to roam to other carriers, but you just don't. It doesn't.
Well, that's right. It doesn't work properly. It doesn't work properly at all. And the frustrating thing tonight, I was talking to Graham and the call dropped out. Not only was it just a normal dropout, I completely lost the network altogether. There was an Android message displayed on my HTC device and it said, your phone is not registered on a phone network.
What's going on with these guys?
Oh, it's almost got to the point now whereby Three, look, you know, it's been fun for a long time, but ever since they've done the move from the where your handset used to roam onto Telstra, if Three's 3G coverage was lacking, ever since then it just has been noticeably poorer.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's some observations during the course of the week too. I was in Malmesbury, central Victoria, lovely part of the world. Basically about 200 or 300 metres from a Telstra base station, which I then found out to be Telstra because I looked on the map. And yes, no one else to be seen anywhere. But theoretically, you roll back onto Telstra when you're on one of the Three network and things like that. But no. Well, it did, just for voice. Data, well, you couldn't use it. So I plugged my Next-G SIM in and I just had blistering broadband, as you would expect.
Yep.
In the middle of a paddock in the middle of central Victoria.
And you were twit-picking away merrily.
I was. Mm. I was venting too. My therapy on my Facebook page. It was good.
You were yelling at Three on the Next-G network.
I was.
And using the Next-G network to do so.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about other things which have happened today in the news. Well, actually this week. It's been a very busy week, the last little bit. Facebook, obviously, launched their little mail shenanigan thing come last Monday, which is going to be, well, they're talking about a bit of a Gmail killer, but maybe it's not going to be a Gmail killer. because now we've sort of seen it. They're just going to roll it out. It's just messaging. Adam Turner's got a bit to say on that.
Good, good.
Coming up fairly shortly. But
so it's being rolled out progressively to users in the similar way that the change to the Facebook user interface was rolled out. So as people log in, they'll start to slowly see the new messaging interface. Is that right?
So that was good. So we've got a little bit about that coming up fairly shortly. Adam's going to talk about that.
I saw Social Network.
Did you? What did you think?
Yay!
It's good.
It is good.
Yeah.
I really
got to talk.
It.
Yeah, good.
Sorry.
Microphone thing there.
Too scared to touch it because it fell off when we first started. So I don't want to move it to a more appropriate place.
That's another story. Yes. No, it was very enjoyable, actually. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, what did you give it out of 10?
Oh, probably a 6.5 or 7.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Ooh, I liked it a bit more than you did. Probably the Winklevoss factor.
You like the Winklevoss. You had factor Winklevoss.
What Winklevi. Did you think of the Winklevosses?
The Winklevi.
They were very attractive young men. But they're probably a different take on them to so that it, which Lena had.
Yeah. I haven't really had a look at it yet or anything like that, but what did you think in respect to factual correctness? I know it's not supposed to be a doco or anything like that, but was there much in respect to, oh, yeah, I remember that, or, well, they're embellishing the truth a little here?
I think it was fairly factual. My understanding of where Facebook's come from, where it is now, and things that have happened along the way, I think it was pretty close to the mark. They've sort of they've created a lot of drama and a lot of tension, and they've probably embellished real life to a large extent because they're making a movie. They're making something which
is entertaining.
It has to be
it?
Entertainment. That's right. And you know, I think I saw a comment from Zuckerberg somewhere along the line where he was asked about the movie. He said, "Oh, you thought it was quite enjoyable." There wasn't that tension and there wasn't the girls and the parties and all the stuff that was in the movie. Basically, it was just a whole lot of guys sitting around, computer nerds, hacking out code on their computers for years and years. But he said, obviously, you know, it's a movie. They have to put stuff in it and create tension and create angst and make it all interesting and riveting from an entertainment point of view.
So. Correct. And did it entertain to 60-odd percent?
Yeah.
Six out of ten.
What did I say? Six and a half, seven, something like that.
Okay,
yeah.
He's changing his tune already. Yeah, yeah, good.
Is that not what I said? But there's some people are saying like it's 9.5 out of 10. I probably wouldn't go that far.
I'd say an 8. I think I said an 8 last week when I talked about it. But that could be the Winklevi factor.
Okay. I don't know what that is. I'll have to see it. All right, that's good. I'm glad you've hitting the... Sorry?
It was the one actor, by the way. Did you know that?
It was, yes. I did know.
I played
found
the twins.
That out.
Yes. It's very clever.
All right, in other news, we'll talk a little bit about NBN because there have been a lot of shenanigans going on there. I like the word shenanigans. I saw it in print the other day.
Did you?
I did.
Where did you see it in print?
Where did I see it? I did.
It sounds like something you'd name a kindergarten or a childcare centre.
It does,
doesn't
it? Yeah.
Shenanigans.
Oh, shenanigans? Maybe. I don't know.
Be a good iOS device game.
Shenanigans.
Yes, it could be an
Apple shenanigans.
Yeah. Hey, we'll talk about that too. Isn't iOS 4.2 is...
0.1.
0.1?
Out isn't 0.2? Developers, according to...
Oh, was it 0.1, was it? Okay. Yeah. Oh, there was 0.2. See, I'm so behind the times these days. Or maybe I'm in front of the times in this case. All right, I just want to talk a little bit about mobile technology before we go too much further. Vodafone had a bit of an outage during the course of the week, and apparently they ended up blaming data issues and a software upgrade which prevented all their customers from having access to... mobile broadband, which was a bit of a bummer, but Vodafone Australia, they basically said it was a software fault for weeks of data browsing issues on their network. I wonder if that had anything to do with what we experienced, or I experienced on the weekend. So, yes, good on you, Vodafone. Also today, Telstra completed its third LTE, long-term evolution trial.
Yes.
Which is all sounding pretty snazzy. This was the third phase, and they did that by conducting a live video call between Sydney and Melbourne on an Ericsson kit. The carrier said that it had run the trial between its offices at 400 George Street, Sydney, and 242 Exhibition Street in Melbourne. And just as a little sub-note there, I reckon they'd have pretty good fibre optic cable there too, just as a bit of redundancy.
Absolutely.
Conducted speed and throughput tests over the network and posted it all up on YouTube. So apparently it all went very well, swimmingly and all that, and all they've got to do now, I guess, is roll it out to customers in the not-too-distant future.
We have to have manufacturers start churning out handsets that support LTE.
Well, it's happening in the States, surely, so I can't think of it too far down the track.
Now, is this the technology that Telstra launched with the hologram image at each end, saying that you'll be able to do this in your living room?
No, that was
GSM, that was, you know...
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure what technology.
I'm just trying to think, what was that curve we spoke of a couple of weeks ago?
The peak of disillusionment.
That's the height
of disgruntlement.
Yeah, that was all in there.
That's where I am at the moment with three. I'm at the height of disgruntlement.
Yeah, okay. Well, vote with your feet, my friend.
Wasn't it a stroll. The trough of disillusionment? Was that one? Disillusionment and the peak of
Enlightenment.
Yeah, there was something like that we were talking about a few weeks back.
That's it. That was the one. Now, in other interesting news, Telstra becoming incredibly competitive in the mobile broadband market at the moment. Listen up, Dr. Ron,
because
this applies to you.
I'm listening.
Obviously, you've been familiar that they've released a new set of caps and things like that, which brings their service offerings in line with a lot of what their competitors do. Today, they actually, in their prepaid market, because you can now get a prepaid cap with these guys, which is pretty good. And I think if people start moving away or getting their mindset out of postpaid and prepaid, because you pay it anyway, it doesn't matter if you pay before or after.
Yep.
Evaluate them for what you best need. And this applies to all networks, not just Telstra, anyone you like. And this in particular, I thought was really quite good because traditionally, to access Telstra's mobile broadband was fairly a pricey option unless you bought up big quantities of it and used it as a commercial buyer. But today, just today, this Monday, that the show goes to air, which was last Monday, depending on where you are listening to us on the pod or on other stations.
Yep.
They've changed all their little bonus packs. They have a thing called a browsing pack, which you can plug into a prepaid. And what they've done now is they've changed all their data. So for the same price, if you paid $10 extra a month, you used to get 200 meg for browsing for mobile broadband.
Yep.
Now you get a gig.
For the $10.
For $10.
Yeah, that's good. That's more like it. That's all we want to see.
Yep, and the $20 one went from half a meg up to two gig. Sorry, half a gig to two gig.
Yep.
And the $29 one is new, which gets you 3 gig.
Yep.
$39 gets you 5 gig, which is up from 1 gig. So, you know, Telstra are actually now starting to give a little bit more in respect to broadband.
That's good.
On their mobile plans. Also, they have caps and things like that, and their inclusions have also increased on that as well. So, not wanting to give them too much of a plug, but yeah, well worth considering now as an option against what would traditionally be one of their rivals if you're looking for quality, cost-effective telecommunications in the field.
And I'm desperately looking up on the interwebs and can't find it. I'd heard a whisper that one of the Telstra plans for iOS devices had an extended coverage, so it didn't expire after 12 months, after 1 month, your data usage. You could actually carry it forward, but go and check the interwebs. And
with Telstra's prepaid data, if you tip in or if you chip in and re-cash up, recharge I think is the word I'm looking for, if you recharge before the expiry date and you've still got some left, it rolls into your next month, which is really good.
Which is new because it...
No, it's not too new.
Isn't it?
No.
I thought you used to...
You're not with Telstra, I am.
Ah, okay. For Telstra, it's not new.
Not too new. So, for example, if you had... say you bought $50 worth of broadband.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of your 30 days or however long you had to use it, you had $10 left,
mm-hmm.
and you chipped in with $50, you would then go to $60 for the rest of your month. So you don't actually... It doesn't actually vapor disappear like a lot
That's
of
good.
Phone companies sort of make it do, which is quite good. So
I found it. Telstra, this is on one of the Mac forums, as you would imagine. Telstra have announced a 12-gig data pack for your iPad with a 265-day expiry.
Yeah. It's good, isn't it? You'll also find that if you want to, you can go... they have a product which, for $150, gives you 1 year's broadband to use it, so which is really good. Gives you 10 gig and you've got 12 months to use it. So it's really good. I think we're starting to see some great changes in this country in prepaid mobile broadband. If you're living in the United States, you have no idea what we're talking about, because I tried to buy it over there. I was over there about 4 or 5 months back, and you have to sign your life away.
You want prepaid what?
Yeah. You can't. You just cannot buy mobile or prepaid broadband like you can in this country.
So you have to sign up to a plan.
Yeah. And they want $20 or $40 US a month, and it has to last for, you know, whatever the term of the contract is. No such thing as prepaid.
Warlock in our chat room says he's on Telstra Next G and he's upgraded his postpaid browsing pack to 1 gigabyte for $10 per month.
That's right.
Isn't that great?
Go and have a look on their website. All changed today if you're a Telstra customer.
They're also, something to note, on the Telstra Mobile's homepage at the moment, they're pushing Windows 7 like nothing on earth.
Really?
Sorry, not Windows 7. Windows Phone 7, I should say.
Yes.
Which is good. So they've got the HTC 7 Mozart handset, and they've also got the LG Optimus 7Q handset running Phone 7. They've got an Android offering there, which is a Samsung Galaxy 5, and they're still pushing that, the T-Touch tab.
They had a few issues with their T thing. Apparently someone's been infringing patents or something, I think I read during the course of the week too, which has created a bit of unrest in the Telstra world.
I was very disturbed to hear about that with the GPL violations of Telstra with their I can't remember whether the T-Hub or the T-something else, but one of them, yeah.
GPL, what's GPL, Graham?
It's not
General
a big ask
something when, licensing, isn't it? General
Public License.
General Public License, there you go.
Yep.
Yes, yes.
That's right. It's an open source license, and the gist of it is that the programmers say anyone can use it for anything. You can even make money out of it if you want to, like Telstra are doing quite legitimately. But they do say that if you modify it, you've got to release the modifications back to the community, and that you've got to provide a copy of the source code so that the users have the same opportunity of modifying it as any other open source software. It's not a big ask to get, you know, high quality free software, and to find that they're not complying with those simple basic requirements is very disappointing. So hopefully they fix it up now, but yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. It'd be quite frustrating, I guess. But anyway, I think that's pretty much all of our Telstra gossip. Other interesting news that's happened this week, the NBN shenanigans. Sorry, there's that word again, Dr.
Shenanigans.
Ron.
Shenanigans!
Sorry. Can we... Thank you. Very loud in my left ear.
I know.
The NBN goings on. Obviously, everyone wants a little bit of transparency, and for the government to put down their business plan on the table. And everyone's doing backdoor deals. You know, Mr. Senator. Oh, I can't think of his name. Nick Xenophon.
Yes.
Basically, they tried to say, well, yeah, you can have a look at our policy, but you've got to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And he basically came back and said, well, I can't do that. And I agree with him. I like Nick. I think he's quite his morals are quite good. But and then they've done a deal with the Greens to do, look, there's, what's going on here? From a citizen, from a consumer point of view, are we ever going to find out the truth about the business plan of the NBN, or doesn't it really matter?
Well, there's a lot going on here. It was a massive week in terms of news for the National Broadband Network. As we said in the Tech Talk news up the front of the program, the government has got the bill through the lower house.
This is the separation bill.
This is the separation bill. It's so that, that's right, Telstra will be separated into wholesale and to structure, infrastructure.
And so now we're, there's warfare in the Senate, because it has to go through the Senate now to be approved. And apparently there's been some hostilities in the Senate, as Mr. Conroy faced today, repeatedly skirting questions on the NBN business plan, stating that, you know, it's confidential. And, you know, there's business, you know, what's confidential about the biggest thing in Australia?
Mm.
Why do Australians need to be kept in the dark about the taxpayers' money that's being spent on this?
Yeah, well, the Prime Minister's main reason that she told Parliament for withholding the business case was that the opposition had already made up their mind. They were already on public record as saying that they were going to scrap the NBN, so there was no point in releasing business case.
No,
this is what she said. I'm not agreeing with it necessarily.
Yeah,
this is what she told Parliament last week.
A rat.
Yeah. Look, it's doing no good for Telstra, any of this.
Well, their poor share price.
Oh, the share dipped to another record low. Just keeps going down and down and down. So $2.55. $2.55 last week it dropped to.
I think we've got things to be thankful for. It's what we were just talking about with, you know, becoming a competitive market force, really, isn't it? They have to compete if they want to, you know, the end is nigh. And I think they're trying to get the separation thing done and dusted by Christmas, which is only
pretty quick.
A few weeks away, really.
Well, the Telstra board obviously were talking it up. They were saying, look, Telstra's in a strong position. Catherine Livingston, who's the chairman and director, she said that in the short term, we need to do more to protect shareholder value. The Telstra board is very
concerned.
They're
keeping their dividend at something pretty good to try and keep people on board. Don't sell. We'll give you money.
Yes, that's right. But as some shareholders pointed out, we're not interested in dividends. We don't care what your dividends are that you're paying us. We want return on our investment. We want
their
better
buy price.
Exactly. We want a better share price. Mm. So it was a very busy week. Now that bill's in the being looked at by the Senate.
Conroy faced a barrage of questions from coalition senators. He was asked when he received the NBN co-business plan, whether he had identified the confidential parts of the plan before offering confidential briefings to independent senators, and before he drew up non-disclosure agreements before, you know, these guys had to sign it. So, there's going to be more of this, and it'll probably all come out just as everyone goes to Christmas, and then we can't do anything
about it until
they all come back. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Around the world, you're listening to Australia's premier Tech Talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
So, Dr. Ron, yes, that was pretty much a bit of the news wrappy sort of stuff. That's local, and that's half the show already. And yes, I'm quite looking forward to my pizza when Graham brings it back. He's probably there.
Hope the gelati survives.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, I can
it's
do
a bit of a dry. Yeah, good. All right. What else has been going on in the world today? Well, let's look about ISPs harboring half the world's zombies, or should I say about 50 of the ISPs of the world globally, which isn't too many, harboring half of the world's zombies. OECD researchers have found that piracy, not high-speed broadband, as often assumed, explains the prevalence of botnet infections in a country. So what they're sort of saying is that it's all the funny things you get through BitTorrent and those funny downloads, because that's how it all sort of...
So not the fun zombies?
No, not the fun zombies, the ones you play in the video games or anything like that.
Boring.
It's the ones where they just sit in the corner and wait.
Oh.
And loiter.
They lurk.
They lurk.
Yeah, okay. Not just BitTorrent, by the way. If I can talk again.
Do go on, Graham. You push your fader up.
Things like add-ons for email programs, things that do, you know, extra smileys and things like that, they're very attractive to a certain
the younger part of generation. The
quite often they come bundled with spyware that does less pleasant things to your machine as well. So a lot of these programs that they do nice or interesting things, that they're free, but the way they're paid for is that they install junk on your machine that allows your machine to be taken over, which is most unfortunate.
Graham, what do you think about these things?
It's not just BitTorrent.
What do you think about these installers which offer you a free scan and all that sort of stuff? That's fraught with danger, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. There's a couple of classes of those. There's a lot of them that bundle otherwise legitimate applications, like the Google Toolbar. Or there's been a couple of virus scanning or malware scanning type applications, the McAfee one and the Norton one that's been about recently, that have been bundled with things, and they come along with, you know, quite legitimate programs like Java and Flash and Adobe Reader and things like that. And I call that foistware, because it's not the program that you're actually after. It's a completely different program. It's nothing to do with what you actually need, but it's installing it along with it. And what they're using that for is that's a revenue-raising thing for those, to help pay for the distribution of those sorts of free applications. But there's another sort of the same similar concept, but the sort of the seedier end of the market, where the stuff that comes along with it is quite unpleasant.
Indeed. All right. It's after analysing 190 billion spam messages from 170 million sources captured between 2005 and 2009, just between the espresso machine and that woman doing the dishes.
Poor man.
The researchers found high-speed broadband was not associated with high levels of botnet infections. In fact, it was the reverse. So interesting findings there. Good to see people are researching that sort of stuff. All right, a mandatory...
Yeah, possibly that's a reflection of perhaps the less experienced PC users are more likely to install dodgy software and perhaps have the slower speed connections and are perhaps still using dial-up and that sort of thing.
Be interesting to see the stats and see how many people are still using dial-up. It'd be very interesting, because I don't know.
Certainly
you would think a lot of people would have migrated now to at least some form of a digital
signal. I think a lot of the older generation that aren't quite as tech-savvy might have dial-up still. My parents only switched from dial-up about 2 years ago when I forced them to.
Did you?
Mm. Telstra didn't tell them that they were paying $40 a month for dial-up and that they could pay $40 a month for broadband, so I had to.
Yes.
No, you'll find that no ISPs actually try and do the right thing by it, because if they can keep someone on a plan which is of lesser value, then it's got to be good. How's Bob, by the way?
Bob's good. We have a new Bob now.
Yeah?
Bob's
is this Bob behaving himself?
Yes.
So you've come to the conclusion it was a Bob-related issue.
It was, because it was doing a hard reset.
Last week, you were dropping out plenty on your DSL line.
The wireless and everything was all dropping out all together.
So you've got a house-trained Bob now, and he's behaving himself a lot better.
For
and
now,
connecting.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I still treat him a bit mean to, you know, show him who's boss.
Good. Yeah. You have to do that. How are your voice calls going? Have you noticed any difference in the clarity of the calls compared to the old fixed line?
A bit of trouble with people realising that I'm calling them. So,
Have you
got
a new number or something, have you?
No, I've got the same number as before. But Mum was saying when she calls and I pick up, it sort of... doesn't actually sound like it's getting a dial tone, that sort of thing, but I think it might just be some tinkering we might need to
do. Dr. Ron, you got a bob. What's going on here?
I do have a bob. Yeah, it sounded to me when you described it the other week that it was a hardware-related problem.
This is a product from iNet, for those wondering what we're talking about. This is a voice package and thing.
Yeah, a bob is a clever router and internet gateway and hub and voice over IP device. Mm. Yeah, it's all packaged into one discrete unit. It works very well, and that's what iNet's selling at the moment.
Very good. Mandatory ISP filtering installed until mid-2013. Just in case you wanted to know, this is more shenanigans going on through...
more shenanigans!
Yes. Legislation to introduce mandatory ISP has now been deferred to the second half of 2013. And this is according to the Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy.
Yes.
2013, that's only 2 years away, really, isn't it? It's not that far when you think about it. So
the ABCDEF.
Yeah, the Alphabet Department. That's them, isn't it?
Broadband Communications, Digital Economy and Facebook. That's what the F is, isn't it?
It is now.
It is now.
It is now.
I should try and register that.
Speaking of Facebook, you know...
Yes, Facebook.
You know how Facebook's really going to launch this new mailing system and all that sort of stuff?
Yes, go on.
Yep. It's interesting. Google of... Lars, who was instigative, if there is such a word...
Yes,
of a lot of Google's maps and the likes...
Yep.
Actually jumped ship. Because he was big behind Wave, and Wave's now dead. And Lars has gone over to
Facebook, is he?
To Facebook.
Mm.
Mm.
Andrew, you've embraced Facebook, I'm sorry to tell you, in case you hadn't realised.
I have.
You started out with very tentative status updates, and the last couple of weeks you've got a little bit bolder every day, more and more status updates. You're posting pictures there now, you've got your own photo gallery, you're liking statuses.
Welcome.
Welcome aboard. Feel the love. Feel the Facebook love.
I've got a guy in the office. His name's Brian. He does it for me.
It's not you at all. It's Brian.
Aww.
Is that in his job description now?
Correct. He's my Facebook updater.
Makes coffee and does editing on video programs.
You're ruining the mystique. You're ruining
updates
it.
Andrew's Facebook.
Now, we've been chatting for a while. Dr. Ron in particular has been chatting for a while now.
Oh, I'm
In the shows. No.
I'll unplug.
About the death of email and what the replacement's going to be that's somewhat more secure.
It ain't this.
Well, is this the beginning of it, though? Because you need a protocol outside of email, and people are used to Twitter, and now there's this new Facebook arrangement, and there's other instant messaging. So is this now going to be the future, perhaps, of email messaging, rather than the quick, you know, thanks, no thanks, see you for lunch, etc.?
I like Twitter because you can't waffle. You can communicate quickly and concisely and to the point. And you don't have all this verboseness to read through.
So what's the text maximum for the new Facebook offering?
Don't know.
I don't know about the email, but it's like 420 characters for a status update.
Right.
I think.
Oh. Mm.
Okay.
Well, if it's going to compete with email, I can't have any sort of restriction of any reasonable sort, I don't think.
No. But it's messaging within the network. Anyway, Adam Turner is going to be talking after the break. But before we go to the break, during the course of the week, I caught up with Michael Cordai. Now, Dr. Ron, there's a photo of you and he on the front of our website.
We were chewing the fat, weren't we,
a few weeks back? You shoved a big black microphone in his face and you're talking about IE9. When was that? That was probably about 2 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he had some great stuff to say.
And you can hear all of that interview with, actually, all the launch, if you're interested, about IE9 on the Tech Talk Radio website. Just click, I think, the photograph. It'll take you through there.
I'll put the whole thing up there. We asked Michael if we could do that, and actually the whole audio of his presentation, which goes for about an hour and 15 minutes or something.
It was very good. It was informative.
If you're going for a long drive and you want something on the background, then, yeah.
Strange man.
You can listen to it intently if you want to. But
Michael Cordai is very passionate about what he does.
He is.
He's a man with three screens as a web browser. I don't know anyone with any more than two, but now I know somebody with three. And anyway, we went down to our local coffee shop in Hawthorne and just down the road from the office, and I had a bit of a chat to him, and I asked him some questions about IE9 and started off with this one.
So IE9, how's it travelling?
IE9 is travelling well. We've had, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I'll find it for you so you can put it in your show notes somewhere, but we've had truckloads of downloads of it for a product that's actually a beta. It's quite surprising the volume of downloads we've had for it. It's now replaced my main browser at home, and that's increasing. I've been doing this road trip around the country, you know, talking to techies, and the volume of people have actually started to switch over to IE9 as their primary browser, even though it's in beta. It's quite interesting.
So your browser at home, is there certain things that don't work on it, like some sites that... I know Twitter. My Twitter has problems with IE9.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. I'm okay. Just wondering, does yours?
No. So it is a beta, so you know, you'd probably always be able to name a couple of sites that have problems with it. So it wouldn't be the only browser that you run. There will be, you know, sites that show up. It is a beta. But I'll tell you one of the interesting things that I've noticed about it, and this was kind of the purpose of bringing the beta out, right, is to get feedback from people who use it and see what they like and don't like. And one of the don't likes, for me anyway, is the fact that there's no progress bar. So if you go to a URL...
But down the bottom corner, you can see it.
Yeah, there's nothing that tells you something's happening, so you kind of just wait for things to happen.
Is that good or bad?
It's bad. It's very bad.
I know, that'd be frustrating. Like, oh, what's going on? Is anyone home?
Yeah, it's bad. So a lot of that's kind of gone back to the product teams, and as they revise it and prepare for another release, a lot of those kinds of feedback things come in. But the reason why IE9's actually moved into being my primary browser at home, and I used to be a Chrome boy at home. I've got three screens at home, three 24-inch, you know, screens, and I surf the web on three screens. I drag tabs all over the place.
Don't you lose things? I do. It's really? Under something.
I don't know, actually. Do I lose things? No, because one of my screens is actually rotated as well.
Oh, dear.
So I've got this portrait kind of, and for reading the web... It's interesting, my behavior's changed. So for reading the web, I drag tabs over to my portrait screen because it's long and wide enough. For watching the web, so for watching videos, it's on my normal widescreen screens. So my habits kind of have the way I use my screens and what tabs I drag to different areas starts to become what kind of content I'm viewing, like the content type specifically, and not just, you know, site A goes there, site B goes there. So the fact that you know, we've done a pretty decent job with tabs in IE9 means I've now moved away from Chrome personally, because it actually does a really good job of, you know, dropping onto different windows and not having to reload when it does it and all that.
I do like
stuff.
Being able to tear out and drop in and do all those sort of nice things with a good... In fact, the bottom, if you actually put a site into your taskbar down the bottom there, the ability to expand the taskbar up and go directly to whatever the website wants you to go to, whether it be downloads.
It wasn't lost on me, by the way. So when we spoke about IE9 a little while ago, didn't we?
We did.
And I'd say 2 days after we spoke, I went to your website, and there they were.
Oh, yeah.
Lit up. And we're seeing that happen a lot. We're seeing a lot of sites use the light-up features, so the you know, right mouse click on the taskbar when you pin it, because you build them in like a morning, right? You know, a bit of research and before you know it, you're there.
Absolutely.
I've actually been traveling around the country demoing how to build these things. My entire session goes for 40 minutes. And within 40 minutes, I build the ability to pin a site, the ability to add their jump list items so they can go to different parts of your site, the ability to make them dynamic so if they do stuff on your site. So, for example, domain uses them. And when you do a search on domain and, you know, you search for a suburb to buy a house in, your jump list dynamically changes as well. So whenever you want to launch that site again off your taskbar, you can actually go to your previous searches. So I show how to build all this stuff in like 40 minutes.
The browser's actually becoming quite a useful tool now when you think about where it came from to where it is today. But the thing I like about IE9 is its speed. It is a very fast browser in actually from the click of I want to go to this URL to actually displaying the page. Yeah. Even the demonstrations that IE9 have with the fish swimming around in the tank and stuff like that, it's pretty amazing. What are the competitors up to? Were they just stunned in all? I think Firefox have got their new VET browser out. They're saying, it's fast.
Yeah,
it's fast, but
they haven't loaded it up yet. 7 out. I think Firefox just released beta 7. Well, so speed's an interesting thing. As I've been doing this roadshow, I've asked the question, right? What is a fast browser? And then, to me, as a developer, the answer I expect to hear every time is, oh, you know, fish swimming around, you know, like stuff rendering really fast and stuff being able to move around really fast and video playing at high resolution. But the answer's often split. It's not just that people consider to be fast. The other half of the answers are usually... the way the UI behaves. So a fast browser is a browser where you hit a new tab, it does it straight away. You drag a new tab around, it does it straight away. You launch an app. So you ask my mum what's a fast browser, and her answer is very simple. The one that gets me to Facebook the fastest.
It's interesting, you know, isn't it? That was one of the other things I liked about i9 when you first launch it up, is that it says you've got these plugins installed and it's slowing you down by X. That's want to disable them?
That's right.
That's brilliant.
So for a consumer, speed is not how fast the rendering engine behaves, right? That's kind of a given. That's the infrastructure. Speed is, I've opened up a browser, I've launched it from a pinned site from my taskbar, and I want to go to Facebook. How quick does that happen? And the interesting things with IE is that we actually monitor what plugins you run, so that when you do launch it off the taskbar, you don't have all these plugins that are holding you down. It's interesting, all the other browsers are starting to hardware accelerate as well, right? So it may appear that IE is the only one, but in fact Chrome and Firefox are doing it as well. And what's interesting is actually comparing them side by side and seeing, you know, the swimming fish one. There's dozens of, you know, ietestdrive.com is the place to go and check out all these demos. So when you go to ietestdrive.com, you can actually click on some of these demos and start to compare them, right? One of my favorite sites at the moment shows all these album covers, and it shows like easily a grid of like 30 by 10, maybe not that many, 150 roughly album covers on the screen. And then you hover over all of them, they all just kind of get bigger and smaller and they follow your mouse, and it's this beautiful visualization, right?
But it's just that, it's the user interface. As you said earlier, if a user has a good user experience, then, and it makes their navigation of the web easier and faster and better, then it's got to be a good browser in a lot of respects.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess you look at where it's going to go to. We're going to see a lot of video. Video is going to be it on the web very shortly. Yep. You need a browser that's going to really look after your, and bandwidth, obviously, that's really going to look after your video requirements. So,
and hardware accelerate your video as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. So IE9, this is where IE9's going. It's really going to look after video.
So IE9, so video on the web today is done in plugins like Flash and Silverlight. Where we're moving is to HTML, which is the language that the web is written in. Version 5 is about to come out next year, and it's going to support video natively, right? So you'll be able to put videos on a web page, and they'll just kind of work consistently across all the pages, and you won't have different players and all that sort of stuff.
Well, hopefully we'll eliminate plugins, whether it be Flash or any other plugin to play video for you. Hopefully HTML5 will pull that down to that common, level.
I think for a lot of scenarios we will, but for a lot of scenarios we won't. So the interesting thing between the relationship between plugins, like plugins have been around forever, right? You know, you've been around long enough to remember Windows Media Player and Real Player and, you know, these guys on a web page. Plugins always kind of lead the way, because the standard kind of takes years and years to get adopted and to get ratified. And plugins, like Silverlight's been out for 3 years and there's 4 versions.
Well, a plugin really is just a portal for developers to embellish what a browser or what
To go beyond what a browser can do and to do the stuff on top of that, right? So video has been a good example of stuff a browser can't do up until now. You know, and so the next generation of all these plugins will be, you know, more about 3D acceleration and, you know, stuff that the browser can't do. And that kind of relationship between what a plugin does is always going to be the same, right? That the plugin does the innovative bleeding edge stuff. The browser natively will do, will do the stuff that everybody needs to be able to do, like render text and stuff. We're going to be developer-y, aren't we?
Absolutely. All right, let's look at Internet Explorer 9's future.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's in beta stage, and we know some companies like running betas for 10 years plus.
Yeah.
What's
not going to be one of those.
What's IE9's future looking like in the next in the foreseeable future?
So we don't have a release date for when it's going to come out of beta. I was thinking back the other day how long it took IE8 to come out of beta. It was less than a year. I can't remember exactly, but it wasn't 10 years. So when IE9 will come out of beta, don't know. There's no date on it yet. But the interesting thing that we're doing is, especially for more technical people who want to really test the capabilities of the browser itself, of the rendering engine itself, there's the beta that everybody downloads, and you go to beautyoftheweb.com to get that. But there's this separate thing called the tech preview, the developer preview, which is not a full-blown browser. Like, there's no address bars, there's no back buttons, there's none of that. Mm-hmm. But the actual rendering engine is the latest rendering engine. So every 8 weeks, we're releasing a new rendering engine. So if you're building websites and you want to see what they're going to look like, you can keep installing the tech preview to check out the latest release of the rendering engine. Excellent. Particularly around things like HTML5 and all these kind of new standards, as they kind of evolve, our rendering engine will evolve with them.
So it would be safe to say that the user interface won't change in the next little bit. It's just doing the fine tweaks in the back end.
I'd be very surprised if we've now turned everything into circles rather than squares.
And then all of a sudden we'll find it there with our Windows updates. It'll all suddenly appear when it comes out of beta, and everyone will have to update it, or whatever they did last time, I think, something like that.
Yeah, don't know.
Thanks, Michael. It's been great.
Thank you.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Talk Radio.
If you've seen some of the stuff on YouTube, it looks a bit strange.
Whilst it is a high-def machine, it's only 720p.
Fraud-def.
Yeah, fraud-def. Yeah, exactly. Take note, Apple, HDMI output cable and carrying case.
Why would I want an Apple TV without a hard drive?
What you're describing is bloatware.
The handset formerly known as the iPhone.
Entertaining.
I don't like spam.
Informative.
There are public VPN services.
Independent.
They've run up to, what, 400, 500?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, Facebook. Great thing, Dr. Ron, isn't it?
It's good.
He keeps telling me. I have been using it a little bit lately. I was bored the other day when I was up the bush. That's why I got on there and started doing what you do.
When 140 characters just isn't enough,
yep.
You can let loose.
There's a sales pitch. Does Zucker know about that? He could probably get into that.
That'd be a good tagline, wouldn't it, actually? Yeah. Facebook.com for when 140 characters just isn't quite enough.
Yeah. Or you could shorten it to just greater than 140.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Facebook.com, greater than 140.
Adam Turner, our regular correspondent of all things from the couch.
Yes.
Joins us this evening, and he does have a view of Facebook all the way over there in Palo Alto from here in Melbourne.
Adam's a Facebook all the way from Palo Alto, did you say? Oh, he's talking about Facebook.
Facebook is in Palo Alto. He can see it from the couch here in Melbourne.
I understand. He's a user of Facebook.
From my house.
Yes. He's a Facebook user too, but he's more of a Twitterer.
I haven't seen him on Facebook. Is he on Facebook?
He is. Yeah. Really? Look at my friends and you can add him as a friend.
Oh, is that how it works?
Mm-hmm. Come on, keep up. Press play.
Oh, okay, here we go. Here's Adam Turner's view from the couch. Facebook, Zuckerberg, and the email thingy.
Can Facebook's titan succeed where Google Way failed? With so many people insisting social media is killing email, why is Facebook going old school to embrace it? Well, it's not quite that simple. Facebook's new Titan messaging platform aims to be much more than an email service. It intends to combine email with real-time messaging tools to create a multifaceted online communications platform. Sound familiar? Yep, it seems Facebook is trying to revive the Google Wave concept. Can Facebook succeed with Google failed? I think it probably can. Google Wave was an amazing concept, but it had two things working against it. Firstly, most people didn't understand what it was. Secondly, it didn't tie in with their existing forms of communication. It was an entirely separate world trying to start from scratch. Facebook can easily overcome these problems. Thanks to the trailblazing Google Wave, people will already have an idea of what Titan is and how it works. Titan won't go through that long "what is the matrix" phase while people struggle to get their heads around it. More importantly, hundreds of millions of Facebook users will be quick to embrace Titan because it will presumably integrate tightly into the familiar Facebook user experience. They won't need to go out of their way to use it or wonder whether or not their friends are using it. Titan will complement our existing communications habits and gradually become more central without requiring us to completely abandon our ways and start again. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg made it clear at the launch that Titan users will be able to send and receive messages from people who aren't on Facebook. It will also replicate Google's new Priority Inbox feature that you see in Google Mail, which ensures messages from the most important people are brought to your attention. Meanwhile, Google Wave was trying to completely change our existing communications habits, asking us to throw everything away and start again. This was Wave's downfall. It would have taken off much faster if it was integrated into Gmail and thus our existing communications channels. Google Wave aimed to be more than a service. It intended to become a platform in which other applications and services sat. Over time, the developers intended to extend Google Wave's reach into the existing internet. Meanwhile, Facebook is already an established platform in which other services run. Plus, the infrastructure is in place for external services and applications to tightly interact with Facebook. This is the perfect foundation on which to build a Wave-like service. It's no coincidence that one of Wave's chief architects, Lars Rummersman, recently quit Google to work for Facebook. Google killed off Wave before its first birthday because Google's going through all these cutbacks. But Facebook is more likely to give Rummersman free rein and let Titan slowly simmer away and develop to reach its full potential. Google Wave was a classic example of build it and they will come. Facebook's approach to Titan is the opposite. They're already here, now let's build it.
entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, well put. Build it and they will come, is what Google did, but they didn't. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. Anyway, that's it. That's the Facebook story for tonight. I don't know when it's going to roll out for people like us, but have you seen anything of it
yet? I haven't seen any changes. No, not yet.
Okay. All right, let's talk about legends of technology. One particular person. Well, actually, there's many particular people that come to mind. There's, I know you really can't go past, you know, the sort of, the what's his name? Mr. Wozniak.
Steve 1 and Steve 2.
Yeah, Steve 1. Yeah, the Woz.
So Steve 1 is Woz.
Yeah, yeah, C1. He's got employee card number 1.
And Mr. Jobs is Steve 2. Okay.
And he left and came back. But, you know, I think, you know, there's lots of people out there, these, you know, people who actually develop stuff. You know, he was the man who got the soldering iron out and put it all together back in the good old days. And if you've actually, I've read his book. The book's really good. That's what you do on your summer holidays. That's what we do. Well, I do.
The I Was book?
The I Was book. Mm. Very interesting. Learn a bit about the man who's, yeah, still very active too. Anyway, he came out during the course of the week and said something which was music to a lot of people's ears and the exact opposite to others. And he said, Android is a platform for everybody. JD, you have an opinion on this?
Well, I did a bit of a rant at the beginning of the show about this. Woz is pretty well known for being an open source thinker. Even the Apple II that he released with the other Steve back in the 70s, when you bought it, the instruction manual came with the entire circuit diagram and the ROM listings that actually was effectively the operating system code. So you could do whatever you liked. Mm-hmm. It was an open standard, a bit like the PCs of today. There were slots that you could make your own interface cards if you wanted and use, and he did a lot of that, and he was well known as being an engineer. That's what he was interested in.
Yep.
So I wasn't terribly surprised when during the week there was this announcement from a Dutch newspaper that he thought that the Android operating system had more features and would be an iPhone killer. But it turns out, thanks to Warlock in the chat for passing this on to me, but it turns out he's also an Engadget contributor, and Engadget have posted a response where they've chatted to Woz about all of this, and he said, no, I was taken out of context. And it says that he'd never say that about Android being better than iOS, and that almost every app I have is better on the iPhone. So
really?
There appears to be a bit of controversy out there.
Gee whiz. Who's got bigger hands, a bigger, deeper checkbook pockets, I guess, really, isn't it? So...
Well, and I'm a bit surprised because Woz is very Apple-centric and you know, very loyal to the company he helped found. So it's unusual for him to come out and say things like, there's something else better. And again, I thought it was because of the open source arrangements would attract him. And they probably do secretly down deep. The other interesting thing out of the Dutch paper is they talk about Apple trying to create a super smartphone as far back as 2009 with a well-known Japanese phone manufacturer. Well, that actually happened. The Sony Razr came out that had iPod, iPhone, iTunes connectivity. So I think the reporter from the Dutch newspaper didn't quite know what he was talking about.
Ah, okay. So there you go. Good conspiracy theory. And maybe Woz didn't quite mean it. Well, taken out of context, which is easily done these days, especially if... Yes. All right.
Woz did a cameo on the very, very funny sitcom The Big Bang Theory.
Yes,
in a show that
I must start watching
recently.
That you're a big follower of that, aren't you?
It's very funny. My wife got me into it. Family Guy and the American Dad as well. Yes,
I don't watch that one.
They're in a different sort of genre, but The Big Bang Theory. Now it's a sitcom and it's very funny.
About tech.
Yeah. It's about nerds, boffins, geeks, all living together.
The IT crowd in the ABC is not bad either.
The IT crowd's a good one. I've never really gotten into the IT crowd. I must pick that up and have a look. Like, it's available on iView. I saw it flicking over iView the other day.
Yeah. Now, you also mentioned Phone 7 before in the show, too, didn't you,
yes.
Dr. Ron?
It's out there.
It is. I haven't seen one in real life, as in outside of the people from Microsoft that like bringing things and showing them to you. Michael Cordai had one when we had coffee on Friday. But failing that, I haven't seen anyone come up to him and said, hey, check out my new phone. Haven't seen that just yet.
That says a bit.
Well, does it? Maybe it's all just too new still, really, isn't it?
But what sort of phone does Michael have? Sorry, aren't you just...
One of the Phone 7 devices.
Okay. You don't know the actual model?
No, I didn't pay that much attention to it, to be honest.
People were running around with their iPhones, and they were running around with their Android devices, or at least people that I know, notably around the studio. But no one seems to be running around with their Windows 7 phone.
Not that I've seen just yet. It's a big ask for Windows, but we'll see what happens in due course. But anyway, teardowns of the various Microsoft Windows phone across the globe have revealed that the micro SD cards cards are locked down to individual devices. Now, they're the little chippy things that you put your apps on. You can, like, in Android phones like you and I have got, Dr. On, I can't speak for you.
Mm-hmm.
The little SD card which you put your apps on so you don't have to take up the phone's memory.
Mm-hmm. But we're used to SD cards, the likes of which you put into a digital camera, for example.
Yeah, they're not micro.
No, they're not, are they? No. They're quite cumbersome.
The micro SD cards are the size of your little fingernail.
Little fingernail, that's right.
And they slot into beautifully into these devices. So, so don't be swapping those out. If you think, I'm going to put a 32 gig one in there, I've only got a 16 gig. Just beware swapping them over. You could get into all sorts of dilemmas. You might deregister it and it'll probably have to rethink and be rebooted and first birthdayed and stuff like that before it comes up. So,
whereas normal SD cards, you just pop in and out of devices at will, can't you?
Yeah, you can. Well, like in the Droid device I've got, the HTC Desire. Yes, you
exactly.
can.
Yep.
Yes, you can. Well, you can even download and save your apps on them.
This would be akin to ripping out the hard drive of your computer and upgrading it to a bigger one.
I guess you could say that, yeah. Mm. Yeah, so, but maybe there's a utility out there that lets you do that. Maybe that's a question for down the track. We can find out when the guys are in next. We can talk about SD cards and how it's locked. US carriers AT&T warned customers last Friday not to replace the installed micro SD card within, because that's the Samsung Focus anyway, because there was no Windows Phone 7 compliant replacement cards available on the market just yet. That was according to TechBlog and Engadget.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've got a new Windows Phone 7 device, let us know. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Let us know how it's faring. I went and had a play with one in a Telstra shop a couple of weeks ago in Box Hill.
Why didn't you sign up when you were there?
I was tempted. I was very tempted. But it was a nice device. Once you get used to the interface, yeah, and then you get a bit of a feel for how Microsoft has designed the interface, it's good. I quite like it.
Now, speaking of Telstra, thanks for that segue, Dr. Ron. That was really good.
You're very welcome.
I had to have a bit of a laugh during the course of the week because, when I say a bit of a laugh, it was mixed meanings because I saw a headline that said, Telstra launches home IT support.
Telstra launches home IT support.
Think about that for a moment. No, Telstra launches home IT support. This is the company that everyone used to make fun of for not attending appointments.
Yes.
And putting your phone on and accidentally disconnecting it and doing that. But now they've ventured into support services for its home users to help repair, set up and install technologies remotely or, wait for this, in person. They're going to come to your place and install your software or your hardware or whatever.
Really?
Yeah. Telstra has announced it will conduct the work itself in cities and through its third-party partner, AWA, in regional areas. Support services to be offered by Telstra include software upgrades, router setups and connecting notebooks, PCs and tablets to a home network. The telco announced that the Telstra Plus Premium Service support service yesterday with partner services Gizmodo, I think, too. They had something to do with it.
So. Right.
But anyway, it's interesting. Gizmodo Chief Executive Ben Ashton told the media that Telstra's announcement was a complete endorsement of the company's business model. So there you go. They're teaming up with people. So it's good. If you've got problems, don't ring us. Tech Talk, ring Telstra.
Ring Telstra.
They'll help you connect your
wallet. How long
online? I don't know. Mm. Prices for the support vary between $59 and $269, depending on the level of technical support required. Could be a big ask. Depends on how long you're on hold for. But, I don't know. Get someone to come out and install your wireless router for you or lock it down for you. What do you reckon?
Is this
Telstra becoming customer-focused and realising that the severance between their back-end and their front-end is coming and that they need to be competitive in the marketplace?
How are they going to do this if they're about to sack 15,000 people?
I don't know. They're going to use AWA, obviously, doing a JV. I actually rang Telstra on the weekend. I got diverted to a telemarketing centre in Manila.
Not in Australia? Oh, yeah. In Manila. Did you ask? Sometimes you ask people you speak to. You say, hello, I'm in Melbourne. Where are you?
Yeah, I did. I said, where are you? She said, I'm in Manila, and I'm not doing a Manilanese accent.
No, it's okay, we understand. Yes.
But to her credit, she was very good, and we resolved issues there and then on the phone. Because, believe it or not, Telstra's website, traditionally, you can't do many things on it. It looks like it's really good, but it can't do certain things.
Mm.
And when it comes up with a big red box that says, I can't do this, please call this number, And then you ring them and they say, did you try this? Did you try that? And I said, I did. And it came up with a big red box that said, call you. That's why I'm calling you. I wouldn't normally call you unless I had absolutely had to call you.
But first of all, does the system ask you to key in your mobile phone number and you key it in and then they ask you what number you're calling from when you get to
perfect.
A human?
It did exactly the same thing for me when I rang.
It's good.
So obviously it doesn't pass the information across. No. You've obviously spoken to the same people, have you, Dr. Ron?
I think everyone's spoken to the same people.
But do you think that the home call system's going to work? Has it got half a chance?
No, I don't think so. Telstra's not somebody, not from the point of view that there aren't probably very well-trained people representing Telstra, but from the point
it's
of view...
It's
the concept, and people, if somebody has a problem with their computer, they don't think, I'll ring Telstra and get
a
Telstra...
Phone
exactly, I'll ring a phone company to get them to service my computer or to help me set up my router. Well, my printer's not printing. It's got, says, PC load letter. I better ring Telstra.
What's that mean? What's PC load letter?
Exactly.
What the hell is PC load letter?
Exactly.
This is what we're talking about.
Mm. Correct. This is Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with more of this frivolity.
Frivolity.
After these shenanigans.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Well, Graham's joined us back in the studio here. He's come back from the restaurant. You'd be pleased to know he didn't bring anything back for us. Type of guy he is. But anyway.
And Lena, you're in my chair.
I'm keeping it warm.
So be sure, everybody, to come up and join us in 2 weeks' time. Is it 2 weeks away? The 6th of December. So week after next. And join the panel and have a... anti-penultimate. It's being held up again.
down a bit. There you go.
Dear. So, Dr. Ron, what are you going to order on the night? You going to have the fries?
The fries? They do it's a steak and chips?
I don't know. I'm sure they will.
The bucket of Caesar salad that I had last week.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the tweet pic?
You were eating Caesar salad for the next week, weren't you?
Lena's Caesar was the biggest Caesar I think I've ever seen. I'm talking salad here.
In a bucket.
In a bucket. You're not wrong. Anyway, there'll be food for all when we get up there.
No, it's great. They're going to have mixed pizza and pasta, and they'll have garlic bread and herb bread. And you'll
don't forget our giveaways.
Desserts and things like that. Yeah, that's food, but we're going to have all sorts of giveaways.
It's going to be fun.
So, yeah, you have to be there. 7 p.m. on Monday the 6th of December.
Yeah, we go live to air at 8 p.m. as we normally do. And
but you'll have an hour to mingle and get settled. And
it will be the last show for the year.
It'll be the ultimate Tech Talk of 2010.
Well, actually, it won't.
No, you're right.
There's a few more to come after that, but they're not. There'll be the summer series.
Can we explain the summer series?
Off you go.
Yeah, the summer series is what we do at the end of each year and the start of every year, just while we have a break.
The best bits.
Yeah. It's a highlights package which runs for 6 or 7 weeks, and we just take the best bits. So we're still on every week. We still produce a podcast. We're still on your favourite community station that you're listening to us on now, but we just play the best bits from the year.
Yeah, and we have plenty of best bits. There's 300 shows, probably a bit of a highlight for me this year. That's
absolutely.
Good. Very 300 self-indulgent, but 6 years on the radio, not to mention all the podcasts and stuff like that's going out everywhere.
And they said it wouldn't last.
Oh. who was they? Do you remember their names?
Might have been me.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is that what it was?
Well, look, no, it's anti-A-N-T-E, not A-N-T-I. If it was anti-penultimate, it would...
The first, really.
It would be against the penultimate. It would be the first one. That's even more confusing.
It's a bit like an antipasto. That's always confused me. It's the pasta you have when you're not having a pasta.
If you eat pasta and then you eat antipasto, you're still hungry.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know, I do enough cooking shows. Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Dear, Dr. Ron's grammar lesson coming up after this program.
Well, actually, I've heard you on ABC Radio educating all and sundry about grammar and things like that.
Before there was slash rants, there was... ABC Perspective.
There was ABC
rants.
Perspective rants. Yes. There was. They were very funny. There's a few on our website still, and maybe they're not linked
anymore.
They
might still be there.
They might still be there. We'll double check the links, but you can go and hear Dr. Ron educate the Australians on ABC Radio National.
And if we still had an ABC Perspective program, which there isn't anymore, then I reckon I'd go and have a rant about ultimates and penultimates and anti-penultimates.
Would you?
Yes.
Well, maybe you could do it here. We could get the music going and something like you did on ABC Radio. That'd be
good. Used to have rants on Brett DeHoot's program on 3AK as
well.
We did.
Yes. Oh, dear. And now here we are on Tech Talk.
And now we are on Tech Talk. We need to get Brett back in as a guest.
Yes, we will. Maybe next year.
We should come to the last show.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, that'd be good. He could get up on and say hello.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. Sweden orders the arrest of Assange. Is that how you pronounce his name?
I think.
Assange, is it?
I think so.
This was quite interesting. The man whose WikiLeaks has brought down governments.
Mm.
Now they're chasing him, and I reckon they've got a good motive. Oh, dear.
If he turns up dead one day, Just saying.
Well, he's been a naughty boy, apparently, allegedly.
Well, I wouldn't say naughty.
He's Australian too.
He's allowed naughtiness.
Maybe he's just a good Aussie boy, just doing what Aussie boys do overseas.
I think he's waving the flag of transparency, personally.
Do you?
Yes.
Mm. Anyway, he has steered clear of Sweden in recent months, but apparently he's... What's he wanted for?
He's wanted to answer charges of sexual assault, I believe. So he's failed to appear at a court in Stockholm, and the court has issued a warrant for his arrest.
Oh,
so there's
okay.
been allegations made against him of rape and sexual assault.
Naughty, naughty.
By two women in Sweden. Yeah, but obviously he can... the Swedish legal system's very similar to ours, I understand. So there's a presumption of innocence until he's proven guilty.
Yes. Yeah, no, I just thought that was interesting because he was an Australian boy travelling overseas.
My flag of transparency wasn't about that, by the way. That was just about WikiLeaks in general.
Well, WikiLeaks is a...
Speaking of your flag of transparency...
Yes.
Tell us about some games for the
the flag
for the
of
old
transparency. Is it like the thing, like the peak of disillusionment?
The,
and
yes,
yeah, it is. I've got it is. We're writing all these down.
You
the trough of hopelessness.
You dive the flag of transparency into the peak of
and I jump in the TARDIS
enlightenment.
We're
gaming
games already, are we?
Well, yeah. So we're running out of time on the show. You better get your gaming bit out. Tell us all about the what's in store for Christmas this year for us bigger people.
Us grown-ups.
The grown-ups.
Grown-up gaming. Do play games.
Oh, look! I read something recently that 35. Is the age of the average gamer.
It is. I think it's 35 in the States and 30 here or something.
So you're pulling
like
the averages 32. Down, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, 2 weeks ago I did a bit on our younger gamers, and then I did a bit on our teen gamers, and today I'm going to talk about our adult gamers, grown-ups.
So what can I buy? What's good for my game box? My game box?
Your game
my
box.
My PS3.
Yeah, for your PS3.
And something with good WAF. Why do you laugh?
it is a factor sometimes, but for your PS3 that has good WAF, I haven't really got anything in the list that's
Yeah, no, I didn't
WAF.
Think that was really a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting an answer, to be quite honest, but
thank goodness.
That's all right. But anyway, no, do tell off
I
you
might
go.
I just start at the start of my list.
Yeah, start on your list and work down.
I'll point at you when it's for your your specific console.
Okay, World of Warcraft, is that got to be up there? Surely.
That's in my list, yes.
Yeah, because the man next to you is obsessed with that.
He's just started again, I believe. He
should have known better, Dr. Ron.
He's had a relapse.
He has. Back to therapy.
A little relapse. Yeah.
There's an expansion coming called Cataclysm for the World of Warcraft.
A couple of terabyte download there. That'll get your broadband over your limit again, Dr. Ron.
That was frustrating.
I could imagine.
Yeah. It's going to get worse. It's going to get much worse.
Okay, sorry. I've distracted you again.
I'll be quiet.
I might start on Cataclysm then, seeing as we're talking about it. It's the third expansion pack to World of Warcraft. The first one was Burning Crusade and then Wrath of the Lich King. It'll be released on December 7th, and it's supposed to be quite game-changing. in terms of... it's got a bit of a apocalyptic-type feel to it. A big dragon's going to come in and...
Really?
...ruin some stuff. Yep.
Okay.
So it's going to be very exciting. The level cap's been increased from 80 to 85.
Mm-hmm.
There's some new dungeons. There's 3,500 new quests.
3,500 new quests.
That's not enough, surely.
That's a lot. Mm.
That'll keep you going for a while.
Someone will get through them.
Someone
will do them all.
Definitely.
And you'll find them all on YouTube.
You will, gloating about it.
Yeah.
Yes. World of Warcraft's a big, big, epic, epic game.
It has been around for a long time.
It has, over a decade at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we burned a lot of time on that when we were young and silly, weren't we, Dr. Ron?
We did. We were, and we have.
Yes. Moving on.
There are more people playing World of Warcraft than there are in Paris.
Really? That many?
Yep. There's 12 million registered users World of Warcraft has.
Yeah.
I think Paris has a population of about 11 million.
Wow.
It has its own economy, its own races, its own laws, and experiences its own disease epidemics.
Really, have you encountered any of this, Dr. Ron?
I haven't encountered any diseases
if
that
you're
I'm aware
to inoculate
of.
Yourself
I might be
or something?
A carrier and I don't know that I'm diseased or something.
Infecting everyone as you go.
What's the currency, Lena? Do you know off the top of your head?
This sounds like
I have
Second
no idea.
Life.
No idea what the currency is. It's just gold, I think.
Yeah, but it's popular.
So this is Warcraft on steroids, basically. It's the evolution of a game, which has been around for a long time.
Yeah, it's a massively multiplayer online role-playing game.
What's it cost to buy? If you go to buy the discs and then do the download.
I You probably
you bought it, didn't you, Dr. Owen?
Yeah, it might have been
probably
about
drop a hundy on it.
Yeah, yeah, about $100 or
and
something.
Then, and then a couple, and then it'll blow your download limit on your broadband plan.
You get do the updates.
You get a 4.7 gigabyte DVD, and you put it in, and the installer says, well, "I need to download a new installer because the installer on your up to date DVD is no longer up to date." And the new installer comes down, and it says, "I need to update some more data," and it pulled down about 5 gigabytes. Of data after
they,
I'd installed the
did
game.
Did they tell you about that before you put it in?
No. No. They gave me a good progress bar, so I knew how much was going to come down. I had an ETA, but as soon as it started, I thought, are you serious? 5 gigs?
So you had to pull down 5 gigs before you could even click start, run,
correct.
Play?
Correct. Could not play the game until I'd done that.
Oh, I'd be furious.
It's because of the nature of the beast. It's such a huge game.
But they don't tell you.
So
that's what annoys
worlds.
Me. There's a big download to come.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, Lenny, you can't play it offline, so you couldn't just install it locally and play it yourself because you need the other people online.
Exactly, yeah. And it's similar, other Morpegs are that big as well. Lord of the Rings Online, the Mines of Moria is one section, and that's 10 gig. It's huge, absolutely huge. But moving on from the very expensive, I'll go to the slightly more budget. Super Meat Boy is available on Xbox Live, and it's one of the most fun games I've played
name.
In a really long time.
I just read a T-shirt again.
Yeah, it's quite an appropriate T-shirt.
Super Meat Boy.
Super Meat Boy.
What's
is,
the premise?
It's a platformer, and you play a small cube of meat trying to save his girlfriend. Now, he can stick to the sides of things, and it makes a lovely noise as he moves around places as he's a little cube of raw meat. It's known for its difficulty level. It's extremely hard. Extremely hard. Not because the game is being unfair, but just because you will fail so much because it's so tricky.
What's the fun in that?
It's a really, really good feeling of accomplishment once you've beaten that hard level that you can't beat.
Peak of accomplishment.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to stick that up on the wall here in the studio and refer to it.
I think so.
It's going to become a Tech Talk mantra.
It will. Mm.
And seasoned gamers will like it because as you progress, you'll unlock some playable characters from other indie games.
Okay.
So it'll be nice if you've played a lot of indie games.
You
recently.
Said it was cheap? What's it worth?
Yeah, I think that was... Well, it's cheap compared to World of Warcraft.
Well,
I think it was about
this is what?
1,200 Microsoft points, so that's about $15.
Okay.
Yeah, which is pretty good when you're looking
points.
At...
What other currency have we got? The Linden dollar?
Yeah. Call of Duty Black Ops.
Oh, that sounds
like
it. We
talked about last week.
Cod Blops.
Yep. I think I walked into a big yellow shop the other day and it was stuck up everywhere as I walked in the place.
It would be, yeah. The marketing was viral, to say the least.
Now, what platform's that for?
That's Xbox, PS3, PC and Wii. I've got Wii written down there, but I've never heard of anyone playing
and
it on Wii.
Just by name, by nature, it sounds like an awfully violent game with lots of explosions and shooting.
It is. Exactly.
Yeah, good.
To
so
a
they've
team.
Named it accordingly. That's
they have.
Well named, yep.
It's the 7th game in the Call of Duty franchise.
Yeah.
It's a first-person shooter set in the Cold War in the 60s. So you're exploring around Vietnam, Cuba, Russia.
Have you played
all
it?
All that kinds of thing. No, I don't dig first-person. Okay. Well, I
I'm
do
interested
dig first-person shooters, but not necessarily the war ones.
Because I think graphics has really come of age. It's very realistic these days.
Yeah.
Come a long way from Wolfenstein, hasn't it?
I wouldn't mind playing it on PC.
Wolfenstein 3D, thank you very much.
Oh, really?
That was revolutionary.
Duke,
that was good.
Duke Nukem.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that.
Duke Nukem.
Yep.
Let's get back to Zork.
I wouldn't mind playing it on PC because I've got my mouse then, but trying to aim and shoot on the little control sticks on the console, I'm supremely bad at. I just can't make it work. But yeah, some people are fantastic at it.
It sounds like it's going to be a big seller too.
It is.
It would be very popular amongst those people that like first-person bang-bang games.
Definitely. It sold more than 7 million copies.
Wow.
On its...
Obviously, that's globally.
On its launch.
Yeah. On the launch day or what?
Sold more than 7 million copies, 5.6 in the States... and 1.4 million in the UK.
Mm, wow.
So that's
big
just the US and the UK. Yeah, it's huge.
So what else have you got for our Christmas stocking, Lena?
Civ 5, which
what?
Is Sid Meier's Civilization 5.
Yes.
Called. That's for PC
what do you
at
do
the
on
moment.
That one?
And Mac, the Mac release is tomorrow.
Oh, Mac gets
exciting.
It going. Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Yep.
What does that do? What do you do on that one, Civ 5?
It's sort of like Risk, in a way.
Risk?
In terms, you know, the board game Risk.
Really?
Very,
not familiar with that. But you obviously are, JD.
It's a turn-based strategy game where you lead your civilization from prehistoric times through to the future and build your empire and have military conquests and other methods in order to do that. It was very critically acclaimed. Yeah,
okay.
Very critically acclaimed. And we've got one to give away at our outside broadcast.
Ooh. Oh, wow! Ooh. Now, the Sid Meier games... The original ones, the first ones that came out for the PC, were like the Tycoon games.
Yeah, I think they were, yeah.
Like Railroad Tycoon.
I used to play that all the time, if I remember.
That's right, yeah.
I loved that game.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And then you go and play with your Hornby on the pool table in the front room.
That's right, get the train set going.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Very established.
From the real world
name.
To the yes.
That's right. No, the name is well established. It's been around for a long time.
They do. He's been doing a few kids' games too. I think I've got a pirate kids' game to give away at the OB as well.
That's an RR pilot.
Oh, good. So you didn't download a
No, the lovely people from 2K.
No, they're very good. Thanks, 2K.
Yes. I've also got a lot of copies at the OB of Mafia 2, which is available on PC, PS3, and Xbox.
Have you got the NBA 12 or whatever it is?
NBA 2K11?
2K11. Mm. Yeah, no. Yes. I've just one person asked me that the other day. I said, I'll find out.
Yes, we've got that to give away.
What's that? What's NBA 2K11?
Where were you last week when Lena was talking
about it?
Basketball.
He doesn't listen.
The basketball one.
Don't you listen to
this
show?
Yeah, I do. Gotcha. The basketball one.
Yep. Yeah, it's the Michael Jordan one.
Yep.
Yeah. Mafia 2 is a third-person action-adventure game set in the 40s and 50s in a place called Empire Bay, which is they've sort of mished and mashed a lot of major American cities. So you've got your New York, Chicago, LA, all elements of those sorts of things put in the one place.
Mm-hmm.
Sopranos-esque mafia dealio.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 11 hours worth of gameplay. It's got a fantastic soundtrack. Lots of big band numbers, and you listen to them when you're in the car.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
It's very cool, apparently. Yes, and we've got heaps of copies of those to give away at the OB and a whole lot of merchandise to go with.
What aren't we giving away?
I know.
Now, that would be really cool with an Easter egg where you could bring in modern weapons.
Back in the 1940s. I'm sure that mods and things will start coming out to
That'd
do that
very
sort
funny,
of thing.
Wouldn't
yeah.
It? All right. Last one, because we're running out of time.
Oh, last one.
Yeah. Well, we can do more next week.
Okay.
Dr. Ron's got to do his bit, otherwise there'll be a revolution.
Okay.
And we'll have our own first person shooter outside the street afterwards.
Happening in the studio. Yeah.
Well, if I have to choose one, I'm going to choose my game of the year.
Oh, well, game this is a big call. Drum roll. I haven't got one handy, but off you go.
Spoilers. That's my game of the year. Limbo on Xbox Live. It's a fantastic little indie game.
Yeah.
It's
because you do the Limbo, do you?
No, you don't. It's very dark. Ooh. Very dark. It's a puzzle, 2D side-scrolling puzzle platformer, so it's flat and moves sort of like Super Mario, moves side-scrolling.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a film noir art style, and it's very dark. It uses only black and white, and you play as a little boy who's a black silhouette with glowing white eyes. And you're sort of plonked in a forest, and you've got to figure out where you're going. He's just trying to survive the whole time, and you.
And what does he come up
times.
Against? Like all sorts of nasty creatures
traps,
and stuff. Does he?
Spiders. The spiders look fantastic.
Not too bad if you're arachnophobic.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't want to play this game if you're arachnophobic.
Yeah. Did you know the Huntsman comes in pairs?
No.
Okay, I won't tell you the Huntsman
off not
comes.
Knowing that.
Okay, good.
Oh no, yuck.
We discovered that during the course of the week at our house.
Did you?
Yes, my wife's at the cars at the panel beaters as we speak.
Oh no.
Oh no.
No, it wasn't that bad. I shouldn't make up stories like that. I had to go there for other reasons. Not because of this one.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I get in trouble for that.
You will. It'll get back. Don't worry about that.
It's had massive success. It sold over 300,000 copies within a month of release, which is an amazing feat for a first-time indie developer. This is the first game they've made.
This is Limbo?
Yes, this is Limbo, yep.
Pretty impressive. Mm. Right. Thank you. That's your all-time game.
Well, of this year.
So far.
Year.
So, well, there's not much of the year to go. So.
That was a good adult game roundup, too.
It was. There's more to come.
I had a few more to mention, though. You can
Next
do
week.
Some research on your own.
Next week.
Fallout New Vegas, Vanquish, and Dead Rising 2.
Next week. Suffering suck attack. This has to be the best technology
show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio. Doctor on listening to the stream.
Furious.
Correct. No.
There's Tony Abbott, are you listening? Wireless is not the answer.
Wacko, I say.
Oh, did you download it?
I did.
I downloaded it too and I thought, what the?
It was brilliant until the power supply blew up.
What's the WAF like?
The WAF is very, very high. It has high WAF.
Entertaining.
He's had the little chip put in the back of his neck.
Informative.
I suppose I may as well just throw that one out.
Independent.
Yeah. I was watching you on Latitude.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm on a plane.
Can you hear me?
I'm on a plane.
Are you there? Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Tech Talk Radio's gadget of the week.
The Sony B-Series 4GB MP3 player. This is a tiny little click-on MP3 player. click? Did I say click on? Clip on. So clip it onto your clothing. It's made by Sony and it has a proprietary bass boost feature, 4 gigabyte capacity, and a new zap button to enjoy Sony's zapping function. What's a zapping function, I hear you ask? Enables you to search for your favourite song. With the press of a button, you can jump to the chorus of the next track with a choice of either 4 or 15 seconds in, making it easy to browse and find the track you want. It's available in blue, pink, red, or black, and the RRP is just $69. So if you're looking for a cheap little usable MP3 player, there's more at sony.com.au. That's a gadget, Andrew. Sony's B-Series 4GB MP3 player.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Following on from Lena's M-rated games, although we don't have a rating system for games, do we? So
we do somewhat, but it goes up to M15, that's it.
There we are. This is a somewhat of an M-rated website this week. It's very funny nonetheless. Damn you, autocorrect.com.
Oh, dear.
Do you despair with autocorrect on your Apple iPhone or your HTC Desire?
Well, it was evident when we tried to send a text the other week. I'm not going to repeat it on air, but it came up with a very interesting correct.
It did. Well, Andrew, you're not alone. Autocorrect changes
very
words.
Very embarrassing if I hadn't looked at it.
Sometimes without rhyme or reason. And if you're chatting with someone and hit send too quickly, it can lead to some very funny results. This site is dedicated to all the embarrassing, questionable and hilarious autocorrect moments. If you've been screwed by predictive text, says the website.
I'm just having a read of it now.
These guys want to know about it. Take a screen grab of the incident and submit to this website. That's our website, Andrew. DamnYouAutocorrect.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A new Japanese vending machine uses facial recognition technology to recommend drinks based on the customer's age and gender.
I'm glad I've only got a minute to go.
And sales have tripled as a result. Suggested products may also change depending on the temperature and the time of day. The machines use 47-inch touchscreen monitors with embedded sensors that help to determine details of anyone who approaches. After identifying the customer, the smart machine will show images of recommended drinks, which will also alter according to time of day and the temperature, which is what I said before. There you go. The company plans to introduce 500 of the next generation models across the country in the next 12 months.
Based on your face.
Based on your face.
So what do you reckon you get? Would you get a Coke, a Fanta, a Sprite,
I'd get a
Scotch and Coke, a Bundy and Coke, or a
couple of Bonox.
Yeah, sorry, I probably shouldn't say that on the radio. But anyway.
Vanilla Coke.
A very stiff macchiato.
Yes.
Yes. That's Tech Talk Radio.
Speaking
for the week.
Of stiff macchiatos, outside broadcast in just 2 weeks' time.
Quick, woo-hoo. Give it a quick plug.
Yep, absolutely. 6th of December, 7 p.m, Sophia's Family Restaurant, Burwood Highway, Burwood East. Come all.
Be there. But we'll talk about it again next week. Join us. Same place. Where are you listening to us? Same time. All that sort of stuff on the pod. And send us an email and chat with us and do all that sort of stuff. Till then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Lena van der Venter. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week. Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.